Episodes in accordance for the wheelchair audience. You don't want to miss any audio clips, cause we're providing information, tips and some tricks for every state and every nation. Someone can benefit, like, what's the best fabric? Should I get the Tiger's yellow carbon fiber palette?
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, wheelchair nerds, welcome back to another episode of season two. I had to pause because I couldn't remember what season we're in. Sorry about that, guys. A quick little heads up and shout out to our guest host from last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, Nicole LaBerge. I actually was out for some unexpected family emergencies, was not prepared to be out for 2.5 weeks. And cool thing was, I have some awesome teammates who jumped in and kept the podcast going. So if you guys did not check out the episode on custom seating, be sure to go back one episode and check it out. Super interesting. And I'm just so thankful for the fact that Nicole LaBerge, who is a PT and a teammate here at Permobile, and Jen Gray, who's an OT teammate at Permobile, and then also a fantastic young woman named Caroline, who I've actually known for a little over a year, decided to come on. And they all three talked about custom seating and Caroline's journey to choosing the right cushion for her. So as we always say, when it comes to wheelchairs, it all starts with seating. So thanks so much, team. I appreciate you guys. All right. So with that said, let's get into the topic of today's episode. So back when I worked as a clinical educator, I remember when I interviewed for my first job as a clinical educator, I was asked to come prepared to give a short presentation for a clinical education session on a topic of my choice. And it was on power mobility and alt drives. True story. I still have that presentation. And I was just super excited because alternative input devices and training and power wheelchairs has been something that has been a massive passion of mine throughout my 20 plus years of working in the complex rehab technology and assistive technology industries. And so it is high time we talk about one of my favorite topics. And also, I think it's something that we don't talk about enough within the industry, because I think sometimes people don't realize there are some simple tweaks that you can do. And then also there are some other pieces of equipment that we can add to it to make someone either more successful driving a power wheelchair or make it so they can just be successful. It's really fun and probably serendipitous that we waited this long to talk about this topic, because someone who I've known for a few years, because she actually used to attend some of my continuing education classes out in Colorado and worked for a provider that I have had a lot of experience with over the years, has now joined the Permobile family. Lindsay has been doing this for a number of years. We always used to say we're kind of kindred spirits, because we love for people to bring to us the most complicated individual who, whether it's a kiddo who is 9 months old or younger, or it's a young adult that people have looked at and said, man, there's no way that person can drive a power wheelchair. Lindsay and I kind of, I think she would agree with me on this one. We like to say, let's give it a shot. We think they can do it. So our guest today is Lindsay Ray. So Lindsay, who are you? What do you do? What's your history? What's your 30-second pitch? I mean, you're now, I said that was serendipitous, because you now work for Permobile. So what the heck is going on?
That's right. Thanks, Angie. My name is Lindsay Ray. I've been a provider for complex rehab equipment for 21 years. In the last 10 years, I focused a lot on pediatrics, and then recently joined Permobile just this past January in product management, which I'm extremely excited to be a part of. So kind of my history, especially in the last 10 years, when we're talking about alternative drives, is working with kids. And that is one of the biggest things, because a lot of times there are other challenges with power mobility and introducing that into pediatrics. But one of the biggest questions is always, can they even do that? Like, is that possible? Or what are the possibilities? And so in my last 10 years, it was really great to have supportive clinicians and physicians that said, let's try this, right? Let's see what power does. And so I was able to participate in a lot of power trials. We would do power days and just bring kids in to see what they would do. And it was absolutely awesome. And so I love the idea. It's just alternative driving. It doesn't have to be a specialty joystick, or there's just so many things to do. But just to put a kid, or even just an individual, maybe it's post-injury, how to get them to move again by themselves. And there's honestly no better feeling than to see somebody move. So that's who I am.
I love it. And a little known fact, or maybe a big known fact out in Colorado, is this is a family affair. I believe your husband's also a provider. So you guys are really into the whole world of complex rehab technology in the Ray household.
He is. He's actually an OT. So shout out for OT month. So yeah, that works as a provider as well, and mostly with adults. So we kind of shared the, I did pediatrics and he worked with adults.
Very cool. Maybe one day we'll get him on the podcast. We'll see.
There you go.
So anyway, a few things that you said really stuck out to me, and I want to kind of approach this podcast as just a scratching the surface. I don't know about you, but I feel like when I've had the opportunity to work with clinicians over the years who maybe the evaluation wasn't as straightforward as they were hoping, and what I mean by that is the client maybe didn't appear just when the client rolled into clinic that there was any way that the individual is going to be able to drive a power wheelchair. And that's really where I want to approach it. Because for me, I don't know about if your experience, Lindsay, is it became a lot more simple than I imagined. I think initially, one of the first times I started working with power wheelchairs, alternative input devices, or just alternative setups, we would go to these like massive, complicated setups, right? And I worked in an inpatient rehab facility. Worked with inpatients and outpatients. And I remember for our kiddos that were inpatient at the time, we would come up with some like the most ridiculous setups. And then the next day we'd be all offended because like nursing was like, we had to take that apart because it just wasn't working and we could not get it set up back the way you had it. And it was like, oh, maybe it doesn't have to be quite that complex. Yeah. The topic is very broad. We're going to try to narrow it down and introduce the audience really to the whole concept. And I guess let's start with a what would you do scenario, Lindsay. So say there's a client, and we'll say 12 years old, put your provider hat back on, you're back in clinic, got very little information, a child comes into clinic, and they're there for an evaluation for a new wheelchair. Initially, everybody thinks as they come into the clinic that they're currently in a tilt and space wheelchair, dependent mobility, client is nonverbal, we'll say has cerebral palsy, you're suspecting potentially some intellectual disabilities. And all of a sudden, you notice that it appears that the client, even though they're nonverbal, is very engaged in everything that is happening. And you're thinking to yourself, I wonder if this client could drive. How would you approach that situation if nobody else in the room is having that sort of epiphany that you're kind of in your head going, I wonder, how would you bring that up to the therapist or the family?
So power mobility was probably one of my biggest passions in looking at giving that opportunity. And so I was always paying attention to just the little things. Observing is key. And like you said, so if you pick up on that, a lot of times I would say, hey, I wonder, right? Let's try this. So one of my first things that we would always look at is when we look at movement too, but incorporating other team members, does this individual use a speech device, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times speech access has been tried and that's an access site. We don't want to take it over, but it is a successful access site. And so that could be, you know, if they are communicating with a communication device, what does that look like? Is it maybe range of motion that we're, you know, dealing with? And so when you're looking at CP, sometimes we have tone, right? When you look at other populations like muscular dystrophies, typically there isn't the intellectual impact. And so it's physical though, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're looking for any type of movement. What does that look like? It's always a, hey, let's try and see. Mm-hmm. And so that is always it's going in with no expectations, right, of mm-hmm. success and not trying to build it up as, hey, if this doesn't work the first time, then it's not a possibility. It's mm-hmm. going in saying, hey, why don't we try it? See what happens.
Give it a whirl. Let's give it a whirl from one of my favorite movies, Home Alone.
Yeah.
So I'm totally with you. You talk about observation. You know, another thing that popped in my head, I don't know if you used to do this, but if I saw a random piece of Velcro somewhere on a chair, especially if it was the soft side of the Velcro, I would instantly look at the parent because I was in a hospital, not in a school. And I would say, any chance does somebody at school put a switch here? And if so, what does that switch look like? Because I'd want to know. Because sometimes you would see Velcro in random places, but you know, that random place, maybe down by their knee that's attached to their hanger mm-hmm. on their tilt and space wheelchair could have been there because, oh, well, the special ed teacher at school found that they have the ability to purposely activate a switch that's put there to engage in circle time. I can capitalize on that little tiny piece of Velcro. That's like, totally. There's a start.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is it's also looking at understanding that these individuals sometimes have not even had the opportunity to move themselves. So what does that look like? Mm-hmm. So also just doing that initial education of, hey, this is what we like, this is why we're looking at this, and just to see what happens. And here's some of the results, that these are some of the things that could happen. And so just helping them understand, that's always, to me, that was always the best start.
Yes.
Is let's just, it's leading into it, right? It's that conversation and not giving false expectations, or, you know, just going in with curiosity.
Curiosity. That's an awesome way to put that. I think we'll probably, as we're getting into this podcast, know you and I had some specific points we wanted to touch on. So I'm going to do my best to stay on track with that. But I'm already thinking, Lindsay, I bet we're going to get requests for people to want us to do a podcast on what the evaluation process looks like and training. So we'll kind of have to, we'll put that over of what some people call like the parking lot, and we'll hit that up on another podcast episode. And just kind of leading us back to what we want to talk about. You mentioned, Lindsay, that you don't always have to go with an alternative input device, alt drive system, whatever you want to call that. So I'm just curious. So, you know, as someone who worked as a provider, did a lot of programming, I imagine, for power wheelchairs, what are some of the things that pop in your head if you see somebody who has a standard joystick? Either it is because of their funding cycle, it is because of a client preference. I would have that a lot with my teenagers who did not want to move from a standard joystick, because I would have teenagers who would say to me, I already look different enough. Please don't make me change devices. What are some things that can be done just when it comes to programming to improve someone's ability to drive with a standard joystick?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think one of the biggest things to start with, because the joystick is very easy and intuitive and basic, not really basic, basic looking, I guess, is to look at possibly sensitivity, right? Mm-hmm. Can we change the parameters of the joystick? Can you change the speed, the sensitivity, the acceleration? All of those impact how the chair drives. And that is just a very simple adjustment that can be done that could make a big impact on, because when you look at that joystick, you are looking at the response as well, right? If I'm overcorrecting and then I have to recorrect and it's moving all over the place, that's a lot of work to try and get the chair just to go straight again, right? And so you can just do basic programming on that chair to change the sensitivities of that.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, because I mean, I think acceleration, deceleration definitely is something that would pop in my head. And when I was doing clinical education, I often have people say, what do you mean by acceleration, deceleration? So just for you guys who haven't heard of that or haven't really done any program with that, basically, I would say it's like going like how fast the car will go from 0 to 100 miles an hour. What does that timing looks like? So we have that with a, you know, you think of a joystick as being typically programmed when you first sit in a standard joystick, typically programmed as being proportional. So the harder or the further you deflect that joystick in the at whatever speed it is how it's going to be programmed to proportionally increase the speed, kind of like a gas pedal in a car would do. So we think about the sensitivity of that. What we can do is if you take those parameters and make it so the chair is very sensitive or very responsive to just moving the joystick, meaning it goes up to that top speed super quick, it can really help out an individual. For someone who's never moved themselves in space, I would oftentimes start with programming the whatever the device was that was going to make the chair go, whether it's a switch, whether it's a standard joystick, to be super jumpy on purpose. Why? Yeah. Because you made a comment about how a lot of times people who try power mobility, say like a 12-year-old, they've never had the opportunity to move themselves independently in space. They need to feel that like something's happening. That's one of my favorite features, because on the flip side, if you've got somebody who's got a lot of tone and who it scares them or it startles them, they're going to, you know, pull their hand off the device because, you know, as a reaction or reflex, but then you can actually smooth out some of that programming. So good, a good tip there. I totally interrupted you, but maybe you know where you were going with your next tip.
No, that's all good. And that's typically where, like, that's a good place to start, right? And then if you look at, just like you had mentioned, the gas pedal, sometimes it's the range of motion that they can't achieve. And so you can change, when you talked about the deflection, right? How far you move the joystick, you can change the, I guess we can call it circle or halo around the joystick so that you don't have to move it as far to reach your maximum speed. And so those are simple things that you can do inside just the programming of a standard joystick to make a difference immediately. So a little bit more advanced in the joystick for programming, you can also then change the axes, right? So especially early on when you have an individual that just, especially in kiddos, they like to pull things towards them, right? And so that's their first instinct to do is pull something towards them. And so if they just can't get that, or because of tone, to push the joystick away, you can program that axis to change. And so that pulling makes them go forwards instead. So something of caution though, that's always great is trials. If the individual has the potential to learn the opposite in the true direction, it just kind of depends on the time frame of that. You wouldn't, if it's something that's going to be a quick skill that they pick up on as far as pushing to go forwards, you want to kind of continue the trial period to reach that point before using the chair all the time in that mode.
Absolutely. Because I will tell you what, nothing will upset a nurse or a teacher as if they don't know that you have changed the access of the wheelchair, and then the child or the adult is not in it and they go to move it and they run over themselves. Speaking as someone who accidentally did that to numerous of coworkers, sorry about that, guys. So always label too. It's another little pro tip there. If you are going to change the axes and leave someone's chair like that, just label it so caregivers are aware too.
Put a little sticker on there.
Yeah, for sure. So those are some pretty good things to keep in mind when it comes to programming. But say, okay, you've done everything you can do with the programming, but it's actually not the programming of the joystick. It's how the joystick is mounted. Mm-hmm. What are some of the creative ways that you have mounted? I'm going to kind of test you on this one, not test you, but help make you think of some interesting clients. But a standard joystick, have you, you know, most people when they think of standard joystick, they think it's mounted directly off of that right arm pad. And I don't know if you're aware that this really shows my wheelchair nerdiness. I actually did research on this, and that was simply because the first power wheelchairs were designed based on manual wheelchairs. And that was where people had the real estate to mount it for someone to be able to drive. But with that said, what are some creative options that you've tried or heard of or seen for mounting a standard joystick?
Absolutely. That also was one of my favorite things to do, is figure out alternative placement of joysticks. So, and just to see the success as well, especially working with kids. I've had two very successful instances of foot controls where there's nothing special about the joystick. It's just placement of it, right? Whether it's arthrogryposis, where they can't use, you know, they don't have any movement in their arms, but they do in their feet. Sometimes even with CP, right? Or a different muscle disorder where you can't maintain position, but you do have control over other extremities. Like I've had that be the case, right? And I had a young lady, she actually moved to Florida. She was amazing because she couldn't live in Colorado anymore because she had shoes, but she would access her communication device and her joystick with her right foot. And so she moved to Florida because she could wear flip-flops or no shoes. And then that way she could do her communication device with her toes and drive without interference. So that's one. But then when you also look at like limb deficiencies, so that's, you know, where can you put joystick placements, whether it's up by a toe, maybe at the edge of the seat pan. You can even look at midline. And that was something the Explorer Mini has that, right? With when we're looking at very early mobility and access, we look at midline. And I had that with one of my little MD kiddos. We had it on the right side, just like you talk about, right? Just standard joystick placement, and couldn't figure it out and tried all of this stuff. And as soon as I put a tray on the chair and put the joystick midwheel with a little yellow ball, he took off. And it was absolutely amazing. And so a lot of times it could just be placement. And especially too, like with arthrogryposis, when you have limited range of motion, those individuals know where their body limits are, right? And so they will tell you, hey, I need the joystick right here, and this is where I can move the most efficiently. Even just a retractable joystick that comes to the inside. Something minimal, right, that doesn't get in the way of transfers. There's just so many ideas of where you can place a joystick. We typically talk about alternative placement, like with chin, right? But there's just the opportunities of where to do joystick placement. That's also one of the go-tos.
Yeah, I was brought in a number of years ago to consult with a client who actually lived out west from me, not too far from me, out in Utah. And reading his story, he congenitally was born with no arms and no legs, because of congenital amputee, although obviously if they were, his limbs just never developed. And as a child, he did, you know, his therapist did exactly what back then you would think someone would do, is they have no arms and no legs, so we're gonna look at your head. And so they put a head array, and he was quite successful driving with a head array. But by the time he got to be a teenager, he really was, he did not like having a head array because it blocked his peripheral vision. He was just like, ah, it's just so annoying. He's like, I want to be able to rotate myself in my chair, talk to my friends. He's like, it's in the way. And so he worked really hard at, he had like a little bitty residual limb on his, you know, where his shoulder was, and he was able to figure it out. And he went in and asked his therapist, he asked his OT and his PT, he's like, can I please try to drive with a standard joystick? And they're like, and so initially they mounted it, turned a little bit to the side, but then he was able to, he's like, nope, I want to just mount it like you normally would, but right off of my shoulder. And he was able to press the buttons, we had switches hooked up so he could change his mode and all that stuff. And to this day, he drives when he uses a power wheelchair. That's what he uses, because he's like, I just feel like my world has just opened up visually. He's like, it's not blocking my view. He's like, like I said, I already look different enough. I already have, you know, I already struggle enough for people to interact with me. If you're blocking, you know, it's like having blinders on for like a horse. Like if you're blocking even more, he's like, you're just cutting me off from the world and people who might want to engage with me. And that always, that sticks with me. I mean, I've met him a good 10 years ago. This guy's probably 30 at this point. So.
Yeah. A similar situation. And it was he was, I think, 8 years old at the time and was driving with his head, similar situation with his limbs, and was driving with his head. And of course, bored as all get out. He's 8 years old, doesn't want to be in the evaluation and talk about this stuff. And said to mom, can I go play video games now? Like, wait a second. How are you playing video games? And it was just kind of one of those cool aha moments, not even thinking about it. And sure enough, we were able to move him to a regular joystick with his toe. Just the coolest, you know, and then everything just opens up, like you said. And so again, it's really just looking at, there's so many options. And with the hardware that's out there now, so many options for placement of joysticks that is not your typical setup.
Yeah. Always ask those questions, talking about the video games and stuff. I mean, you ask the most random questions, because a lot of times people don't think, from my experience, when they come in for an evaluation, it's like they're really focused on their mobility. And that's the little small little box that they've put themselves in, because that's the appointment that they're there for. And they need to focus on that. And so whether it's a child or an adult, they might not even be thinking about like, well, what the heck would a video game, how would that impact me driving a wheelchair? You know, it's like, it just doesn't even like dawn on them. So yeah, I laugh and I say, you know, I feel like a wheelchair evaluations are very much like a first or second date. You know, it's like more of like a get to know you. Mm-hmm. And then just being able to use that power of observation, read body language, read purposeful movements, all that kind of stuff. Another thing you mentioned when it came to standard joystick, you talked about, I believe it was a little boy who you put the joystick at midline and you put a little yellow ball on there. That leads me to another adaptation that you can do for standard joystick would be the various, we started calling them wheelchair toppers when I was working at the hospital. I don't know why. I think the appropriate way is like handles. But I don't know about you, but I've had a love-hate relationship with them over the years, because even with the standard joysticks, the handles just seem to pop off and people lose them.
Pop off.
So question I would get so many times, like, why can I put super glue on this? No, do not put super glue on that. That was a big thing. But off the top of your head, little yellow ball, but what are some other ones that you saw quite frequently that people had success with?
You know, field goal post, right? Because you can kind of set your hand on there and then laterally it holds your hand in place. Mm-hmm. And so that was one that I had quite a bit. The yellow ball is actually a big ball. That was for visual, right? Mm-hmm. So that individuals with limited vision or difficulties could see that. Then also, I would use sometimes even just a smaller foam ball for kiddos. There were times where I would take those, the toys that you squeeze and the ball pops out of their nose. Mm-hmm. That foam ball size was absolutely amazing for sometimes our very tiny, tiny kids. And so I would just drill a hole in there and then use that, and then could just tell the parents, here's a bunch of them when, you know, they fall off or lose them or, you know. So a lot of times it was just finding how their hand fits, right? It could be a post. I used just a single post a lot just for grasp and how that worked. Does it increase, you know, the target site for some, especially when you're just trying something? What does that look like? Can you increase that success rate of accessing the joystick? And so a lot of times we do that with the different knobs, but those are kind of, you know, the mushroom style or whatnot, depending on just how you can ergonomically, if you can set your hand on there and it can rest well, you typically tend to have more control, right? So, and maintain contact, right? Because that's the other thing that we look at is maintaining contact. So if it's not comfortable with your hand, you're going to let go more often. Mm-hmm. How do we look at that? And then you have to look at tone too, right? Is there tone influence on hand movement or foot movement? I had a little girl, she was amazing, and she would drive with her foot too. And dad actually mounted a shoe to the top of the joystick. Amazing. And then with her foot. And so then he would just strap her foot onto the shoe and then she could just go around. And a lot of that, again, was tone, dystonia, because she couldn't control any of that. But then that held her foot into place. Mm-hmm. So it had to be creative, of course, when you're turning the chair on and off because of the joystick placement. But a lot of creative different ways in that sense, too, just to increase access as well.
Yeah, our OT, so I started back at pediatric hospital, worked back in 2000 is when I graduated from undergrad. And long before the days of the digital printer, not digital printer, 3D printer.
3D printer.
Yeah, long before the days of 3D printer, all of my younger folks who are listening to this, the OTs would pull out Aquaplast, the stuff that they use to make splints.
Splinting material.
Because you could just heat that up in the water and make, bend it, mold it, do whatever you want to. We'd run it to the freezer to get it hard really quick to try it and then take a heat gun and make some tweaks to it. So there are a number of low-tech options that are out there. But I would say, please do not, if you have anybody listening to this podcast who utilizes a wheelchair or as a caregiver, I would say make sure that you do this for sure with the assistance or led by your occupational physical therapist. And in all honesty, I would prefer to have the provider, the assistive technology professional with you there too, because goodness gracious, we want to make sure we're not messing up your personal chair. Or like I said, I did have the families who wanted to try super glue. No, that answer is no. Don't do that.
Don't do super glue. There are very low-tech ideas, but I agree. Just check. You know, you worry about warranty, but then also just with the electronics too, you know, the concerns with interference with the electronics. If the joystick is out of neutral position when you turn the chair on, you'll get more fault codes. It's a great point just to make sure you're under supervision.
Yes, under supervision. I would say most of the providers that I worked with preferred being given the heads up on the front end. We would even do that. And this is how nerdy we got, is that we had an agreement. Okay, so like our demo chairs or evaluation chairs that we had in clinic, I work for a manufacturer now. I know my Permobil rep. He was my rep back in the day and he works for us now. Hey, Mark Mitchell. I'll admit we did do this, Mark, is that in our clinic, it was okay to program and do whatever you wanted to the demos. But once it became someone's personal chair, if we were going to make an adaptation, if say they were there for like a weekly OT or PT or whatever appointment, we would give the heads up to the, like, so in this case, it would be you, Lindsay, like, hey, Lindsay, like, we noticed that Charles came in today and we want to change acceleration, deceleration, just a heads up. We are going to make that change. Are you cool? You know, as like just a courtesy heads up. So, because what would happen is there would be this like back and forth game between the get to the school and then like, Lindsay, you'd be getting called by the OT or PT at school going, this has changed. It's different. It's like, just to kind of keep everybody on the same page. But so what I mean by that, as soon as it became someone's personal chair, we took a back seat to the programming because we left it up to the provider, because you were the ones who are responsible for caring or helping to maintain that chair for the client. So
as a provider, there is that continuity, right? Because the provider is often with the physicians, they're often with the home-based therapist, school-based therapist, the families, you know, they're kind of the hub of that, you know, when it looks at equipment management, because they talked with so many different people. And that was always something too. You just mentioned giving a heads up, and that was helpful as well, just in those appointments. Hey, is it a programming issue? Is it a joystick knob issue? And I was one of those total, when you talk about wheelchair nerds, I was one of those that I had my bag of all of my joystick knobs to try. And those I kept very near and dear to me. I mean, you had to, my colleagues would, you know, be able to tell you had to ask very strong permission and sign over your first child if you did not return that, because that was very important. So, but a lot of time, and that's the thing, is they have, the providers do have those resources available, right? To try the different joystick knobs, to have programmability available to them. So use that knowledge, use that expertise.
Absolutely. Now I kind of want to move into just touching on what options are out there for specialty input devices. And when I say about by input devices, guys, this is your input device right now for standard wheelchair is your standard joystick. So input device is anything that you, the person who, the individual who's interfacing with the chair, it is what device they use to make, to talk to the chair. That's the easiest way to explain it. And I'm not going to, we've, you know, only got probably about 10 or so minutes left in this podcast, maybe 15. And I don't want to go down too many different rabbit holes when it comes to this, but I think it's important because, as I said before, I like to exhaust all of my options before having to move to an alternative input device, simply because, well, I mean, whether it is for funding, whether it is for the purposes of that's what the client prefers, simplicity for caregivers, if it's a scenario where there's multiple caregivers, say they've got a school aide that's with them, they're at a facility where multiple nurses are going to be working with them. Simplicity is what I always try to stick with. But there are definitely a lot of times when you need to move over to a specialty input device. Last year, last spring, we at Permaville added a few additional joysticks to our portfolio by a company called Movis. We began to distribute them. And when we did that, we decided that we needed to enhance our options pages, or kind of like have a place or a resource where people could go to go through this. So if you haven't checked it out yet, guys, I would definitely encourage you. We'll put this in the show notes too, just to check out our alternative drive controls landing page. And this is something that we are trying to keep as a living page. And what I mean by that is, as we have additional options that are added or taken away, we are keeping this page up to date. And it's a really great place because you can see the different types of alt drives. One of my favorite thing on that page is actually we've got a silhouette, I guess you would say, of the human body. You can actually hover over and it gives you some ideas about, hey, what can be controlled with the head? What are some options here that would be good? What about the face controls, mouth, and all the way down through the body? Because actually, I used to have a continuing education class that was called Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes. The reason why I did that is because you literally can control different joysticks and all sorts of different methods there. The body, the really and truly wherever the client has purposeful movement is where you can capitalize on that. Even I've had clients drive with their tongue. I mean, there's all sorts of different things. But before we jump into that, I did a little bit of explaining what a proportional drive joystick was, or proportional drive in general. So I'll ask you, Lindsay, what is, when someone says non-proportional, what do you start to think of? What does that mean?
Switches. That's what I think of.
Yes. So what is a switch? How is it used in the driving application? We're going to differentiate that for you guys, because some of you guys may be like, well, I worked with a client and they have a joystick and they've got switches. Odds are their switches are controlling something else in the chair, but switches for driving. So a few questions. What is that? How do they work functionally, Lindsay, as far as like, is there an opportunity to increase or decrease speed with switches? It's a little bit of a trick question. And do you have to be maintain touching the switch, all that good stuff? What do you know about switches for driving chairs?
Right. So that is kind of a trick question, because they're pretty complex. And so a lot of times it's interesting, because in our youngest population, when you look at even like the Go Baby Go, which, you know, they're modifying ride on cars with a single switch, it's a stop go. Mm-hmm. So it's a cause and effect. And when we look at switches, like mechanical switches, there are a lot of different types. And yeah, shoot, you can go into a whole podcast on just switches and what they do. But, you know, a simple mechanical switch, it is just a stop and go. It's fun to plug and play. So on individuals, you can put like a mechanical switch, say, just for forwards. And if they push the mechanical switch and they do have to hold it on that, if they press it and hold, then the chair will go forwards. But you can also, maybe you're concerned about running into walls, so maybe it's just turning and going into circles. And who doesn't love that as little vestibular input? Just have them go in circles. And that's something too. Switches can become plug and play. Now you also have, when you said it's not proportional, so it is a on or off. It's moving it or not. But then going back to our very beginning conversation of, can you change the speed? Not in the switch itself, but you can in the chair. Right. So that's where you can combine those together, the features of the electronics and the switches available to control speed, acceleration, and how that moves within those switches. You also have proximity switches, so that you just have to get close to the switch and not necessarily make contact. And so sometimes that is also fun if you have individuals that are, I used to love to use a tray and put the switches underneath and then put stickers on the top.
Yep.
Because it was just that, it's the visual, right? To get somebody, to let them know that there's a switch there, but they're not pulling the switch off. So that's usually a challenge sometimes. If sometimes individuals are trying to grab or pull the switch, that can be a challenge. And so mounting switches under trays or a different, like that can be fun. But we use switches in so many different ways. It can be a single direct access, like we just talked about. You know, I hit a switch and I'm going to go forwards, to we use those switches to control the electronics of the chair, right? Mm-hmm. You can go into the menu to change your seating. You can access mm-hmm. seating by accessing switches. You can change your speed through switches. Mm-hmm. Turn on the lights with your switches. There's so many different things that you can use. And even when you're talking about some of the most complex alternative drives, you can do single switch scanning, right? Mm-hmm. Where the display just goes through and scans your forward, right, reverse, left mode and on, off. And it just keeps scanning. And then all of a sudden, like if you have just that one spot, you can hit that switch. And so that's when you're looking at switches, it might be basic, but then it can mm-hmm. also be extremely complex because switch lights too, right? You can look for, you can have very minimal access sight and put a switch mm-hmm. there that somebody, you know, whether it's inside their hand, as you said, in their tongue, mm-hmm. It's just, there's, yeah, that's a alternative drives. It's so fun to elaborate on just each one because of yep. how amazing and even just the, where the technology has gone, right?
Oh gosh, from yes.
using, we would have boards where it was hitting here, the touch pads, just where the technology is, and now going all the way to eye gaze mm-hmm. and being able to drive your chair with your eyes, which before it was usually single switch scanning or something. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest thing that I've always looked at, and you mentioned it earlier with alternative drives and complexity of the chair. You can create a chair that drives with, you can combine drive systems, right? You can combine sip and puff with head control switches or joystick. And I mean, you can do so many different things, but sometimes it's not just about the end user. It is the caregiver mm-hmm. that sets it up. Mm-hmm. And if they can't do that, if it's the nurse, the parent in the school, teacher, therapist that can't set it up, then you're going to have that technology abandonment, which mm-hmm. was my biggest frustration, bottom line. You know, and so how do you create the most, I don't want to say easy, but simple way for everybody to have success? And that's, you know, it is not just about driving, being able to get from here to there. That's mm-hmm. not a successful mobility evaluation. For me, success was, can they move themselves, right? Do we mm-hmm. have success with activating the joystick? Do we have success with just experiencing movement where everybody can participate in that mobility? Mm-hmm. And so it has to be success for everybody in that. And so that's my big thing with alternative drives. There's so much that can be available. And the biggest goal is that you should not fear it. There's so mm-hmm. many potentials. And how do we, as providers and clinicians, provide the equipment, the technology that's available, but still make it easy for anybody to use?
Absolutely. And we talked about, I don't want people to get confused on this, because I mean, we talked about what jumped into non-proportional. We definitely jumped into switches, because that's, in all honesty, I would say 99.9% of us who work with complex rehab technology, power wheelchairs, and alternative drive, you say non-proportional, your brain just automatically sees a switch. Mine right. did the same thing as yours does, Lindsay. But there are, and I don't think that there are anyone, I have to check, but there were available on the market non-proportional. So basically that on and off, there were non-proportional joysticks that were out there at one point. I can distinctly remember when AbleNet had, I loved that joystick. And people would often say to me, well, why do you like non-proportional? I said, because sometimes I had clients who need the concrete on and off. As they're learning, they might progress past that. I have no qualms about starting with a non-proportional device to teach somebody on, off, stop, go, even if they physically could use a standard joystick, which would be a proportional drive. So I think we just have to, you know, really continue to think outside the box on that. And I think what a lot of people might not realize is that switch technology, that's what's in most of the older or standard head arrays. It's a proximity switch, switches that are built in there. Sip and Puff has a little bit of a switch system to it too. So there are, you know, lots of non-proportional drive options that are still being used on a regular basis. But on the flip side, technology has evolved so much is that there are some proportional head arrays. I know that ProMobile has some available that you can buy on chair from ProMobile that have different technology and the switches that are built in there that include a little bit of pressure, a little bit of force. And there are also individual switches. I think it's still sold. I know Switchit used to have some where they were proportional switches, where the harder you push on the switch, the faster you would go. Non-proportional and switches have gotten, from the cognitive side of me and the side of me who can understand it for adults, gets this, because I know if someone has had the history of driving a car, you automatically think when you drive a wheelchair that it's going to have that gas pedal sort of technology. And it can be frustrating to just have the on and off and not be able to make those specific little tiny movements that you can with a proportional joystick. But there are so many clients that I see that for whatever reason, cognitive, physical, whatever, benefit more from a non-proportional alternative input device. You know, Lindsay, you touched on eye gaze systems. Eye gaze has come a long ways in the past 10 years. I mean, I keep dating myself when I think back to, I remember meeting the guy who invented the Tobii, which is now Tobii owns Dynavox. There's some entertaining stories behind that from my younger days. But with that said, I think that as we talk about, you know, kind of wrapping up the podcast, or if we were like landing the plane on this podcast, is we really just kind of wanted to scratch the surface and inspire you guys to think that when you see a client, if they don't present physically like someone who would be able to be placed into a power wheelchair and drive with a standard joystick mounted on the right or left, that has really nothing to do with the fact is, will they be a successful power wheelchair driver? Mm-hmm. As we've talked about, there's things that you can do for programming. There's things you can do with mounting. There's a ton of different options out there that you can actually do, whether it's you create your own custom handle or topper, as my teammates and I used to call it, or you buy something off the shelf. There are companies like BodyPoint is one that pops into my mind that sells various joystick handles. And then, of course, the alt drives. And if you're looking to get into, start to grab an understanding of alternative input devices, like I said, check out, you just Google Permobil and alternative drive controls. It'll pop up with a number of different resources. Lindsay and I will come back. We'll probably bring some of our friends on and talk about other specific alternative input devices. But honest to goodness, I mean, from head to toe, front to back, tongue, nose, whatever, if it's got a purposeful movement, they can be utilized to drive a power wheelchair. And that's really what we wanted to inspire you guys and help y'all think about today. It is such a complex topic. I used to teach for 7 hours at a time, and I've done 2-day classes for 7 hours at a time. And we do not have that much time in this podcast. So hopefully we've inspired you guys. Lindsay, will you come back and maybe do some other podcasts with us? Maybe bring on some of your therapist friends and or maybe some of the folks that you worked with that actually use alternative input devices.
Yeah, sure. We'd love to.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. Lindsay, thanks so much for being on here. One thing I did not ask you that we ask everybody is, Lindsay Ray, why are you a wheelchair nerd?
Why am I a wheelchair nerd? That's the only thing I've ever known, actually, since I finished college over 20 some years ago. And getting exposed, came across, and I fell in love with just being able to provide equipment for individuals. It's about quality of life, and it could be wheelchairs, but we also look at just complex rehab equipment. And so all adaptive equipment and how to give people function, let them enjoy life, especially as a parent. How do you make it easier just to give your kid a bath? Sometimes even something simple like that. So just that, knowing that, you know, you can make a difference and help somebody be more independent or functional, I absolutely fell in love with it. And that's the only industry I've done my entire career. So that is why I'm a wheelchair nerd.
And welcome to the product management / product development side of the industry. It's a fun place to be. And of course, a little bit late, but welcome to Permobil. Glad to have you part of the family now. So, all right, guys, check out our other episodes and stay tuned for some other exciting power mobility, power wheelchair focused podcast. And then, of course, we've got plenty of other topics to talk about in the world of wheelchairs. Have a good one, guys. Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobil. Today's episode was brought to you by...
When it comes to alternative drive controls for your power wheelchair, Permobil has got you covered from head to toe. Literally. We offer a full line of control options to meet your individual needs. And we know adaptability is key. Whether it comes to choosing switches, mounting, or how much movement is needed to use the joysticks, or heck, even which body part will be accessing the controls. Reach out to us today to talk about the solution that is right for you.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @wheelchairnerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com. or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. With the wheelchair.